Hey guys, and welcome to episode 185 of the OCDstories.com podcast. Now, this one is slightly different. I interviewed Lily Bailey, who of course I interviewed twice in the early days of the show. It's been a while since I chatted to her, but she was in Austin, Texas for the International OCD Foundation Conference. So for those of you who haven't heard the podcast or don't know who Lily is, Lily wrote the book Because We Are Bad, OCD and a Girl Lost in Thought. And she was also at the ISDF conference because she was awarded the Illumination Award by the ISDF for her services in advocacy. Thanks to the ISDF, they put on an interview discussion so I could interview Lily in front of a live audience, and they helped me record it. So thank you to the ISDF and everyone involved in making this recording possible. I deeply appreciate it and excited to share it with you guys because it's the first time I've done anything like this. But the it was weird for me doing it in front of a live audience, but I think it turned out great. There was lots of audience questions towards the end. Audience members were asking each other questions as well, so it was a really fluid and dynamic chat. So towards the last sort of 30 minutes of the podcast are the audience questions. I have edited out their voices for anonymity, as well as, because they weren't mic'd up, I couldn't really hear their questions listening back, so I couldn't include them anyway. But so you'll hear me cut in 30 minutes towards the end where I will read what I believe the audience question was. Apologies if I got it wrong. I couldn't quite hear it listening back. But great questions, so I wanted to include them. To start with, my audio is a bit low, but it gets better. But Lily does most of the talking and her audio is crisp and clear. So we talk about her story. We go into more detail than we did in the first two podcasts I did with her. Talks about how she makes lists in her head. We talked about having a meaningful life, working with anger, getting treatment, going to support groups, Lily's first experience with her CBT therapist, going back to CBT, mindfulness meditation, activities Lily does that help her. Lily talks about her book, Because We Are Bad. What was it like sharing her story, her epiphany moment in her recovery, imposter syndrome, and then we get on to the audience questions, which are varied and wonderful. So thank you to the ISDF again, and everyone helped record it. I appreciate it. Thank you to Lily for being fantastic. Thank you to everyone that was there and with great audience participation, and I hope you guys enjoy it. So without further ado, here is my live audience-based interview with Lily Bailey.
Welcome to the, not the podcast, but the stage. We've obviously talked twice before.
Yeah.
It was a pleasure to get to know you and see you win that award last night.
Thank you. Thank you. I was really nervous.
What was it like winning the award?
Yeah, it was awesome. I've never won an award before. I mean, I won the Kindness Shield when I was at school, but... So I was really nervous and quite relieved when my speech was over. And it was weird because actually when I got up there, I didn't feel as nervous. I felt kind of among friends and I could feel the support in the room. It was really cool. But you've done it because you won the Hero Award.
Yeah.
And I was sat next to Tommy and he was terrified as well. Yeah, I think most people would be. I mean, like, you've got OCD and then you have to talk in front of that many people. It's kind of like, that was a big exposure for me. And it was cool. And I really enjoyed it.
It was a good speech.
Thank you.
And like you said about the kind of being among friends, there's something about, and hopefully you guys experienced that at this conference, there is that kind of acceptance. Like, everyone just gets everyone. You don't have to explain. You don't want to shake someone's hand. It's a contamination issue. They understand.
Yeah.
There's no, that's kind of comforting in a way.
Yeah, it's really, the vibe here is really cool. I did, I was doing a signing yesterday morning and I was just so moved by the people I met. And it felt like people were really able to speak freely. And I kind of thought, oh, maybe it's just because I'm in America and people tend to, I don't know, in my experience, be kind of like more verbal and emotional. And then I thought, well, actually, I think I was talking with Ethan about this last night, and it was this kind of, I think it's also, it's that, but it's also this conference and what it means. And yeah,
I agree. Yeah. Culturally, you guys are very outgoing, and I mean that in a nice way. Like the British conferences, they're great, but British people are very reserved.
Yeah.
In nature. Yes, that's great.
Well, when I meet British people to talk about the book, like sometimes like their eyes well up a bit and they might bite their lip, but like that's the most. And yesterday, like it was, yeah, it was intense, but in a good way. It was just like, wow, it was cool. Yeah, yeah. And I really respect that. It's cool. I think we should be more like that.
Well, look, congrats again.
Thank you.
And let's get into your story. So, cool. As I say, a little or as much detail as you want. Let's hear it.
Okay. Well, I don't remember not having OCD. Actually, I don't know if you've come out the womb with OCD, but I don't remember not having it. And throughout my childhood, it kind of shifted and went through various kind of incarnations. I spoke to quite a lot of children who say the same kind of thing, that their OCD in their younger years was kind of swirling and sort of almost like deciding what it was going to fix on. And I remember it changing more in my younger years. So I did quite a lot of like physical checking, had intrusive thoughts about like wanting my dog to die, you know, stuff that was really horrible for me at the time, that I thought, oh my God, I'm the worst person ever. Magical thinking about keeping my family safe, and then contamination as well. And then as I got older, it kind of solidified into this list system that I had, where I would obsess about something bad that I had done, and then the compulsion would be to take the first letter of whatever word described what I'd done. So for instance, if I walked past a child and maybe I was like scared of that, I like accidentally looked at their bum, I would take the letter B for bum and put that on a list. And then maybe, like, I don't know, say I worry that I'm walking next to my friend and she says something and I laugh, but then I'm like, was that the appropriate response? Have I upset her? So then I take the letter L for laugh, and then like I'm carry on walking and my foot goes like that. And I'm like, oh my God, I can't even walk properly. So I take the letter W for walk. So then I've got B for bum, L for laugh, W for walk, and I'm going BLW, BLW, BLW. And that could just be like in 30 seconds. So you can imagine, like, throughout the day, I could have these chains that were like hundreds of letters long. And it's quite difficult to focus on anything else when you're doing that in your head. And so that was the form it took in my teenage years. And that's the form that has kind of mainly stuck around. But I didn't know I had OCD, because I always thought OCD was about liking things just so, and being a kind of vague perfectionist. And so when I found out I had OCD, I was like, no, I don't. Which actually I've heard quite a lot of people have the same reaction. I was about 16 then, and I got some treatment, and it has taken a long time. I'm 26 now. And I would still say I do have OCD. But it is a lot more manageable. I was speaking to someone yesterday about, like, sort of, you know, having OCD, but having OCD and having a meaningful life, and just being kind of accepting that. And I think my life is meaningful now in a way that it wasn't when I was completely engulfed, but it is still there on a day-to-day basis.
How did you recognize it was OCD? Did someone recognize it, or was it?
So I didn't know it was OCD. And what happened was, I don't know about anyone else here, but my OCD, like even before I had a name for it, can make me quite manipulative in order to like obey what it wants. So I was at school, I was 16, I went to boarding school in the UK, and socializing and being around people was a real trigger. So I would converse with my OCD, but I didn't call it my OCD. I kind of referred to it as my friend. And we basically decided that being at school and being in a social environment was bad, that I shouldn't do that anymore, and that I should just try and get sent home and just basically be in bed and lie as still as possible so that less compulsions would happen. So I was at school and I made myself sick, and I got sent home. And then followed an experience that I think a lot of people have had where it's like, oh, what's wrong with her? Blood tests, kind of going to the, I don't know what you guys call a GP, like a your general doctor. And I wasn't really helping myself because I wasn't saying, at the time it didn't feel like I was kind of not saying, I just didn't know how to really verbalize and express what was going on. Because I didn't know it was OCD, so I just, it was a confusing time. Anyway, so I got sent home, and I basically lay in bed just not moving in order to try, because at that point, even moving my hand in a weird way could cause me to obsess about that and have to put it on the list. So just trying to stay as still as possible. Anyway, then I eventually, all my blood tests were fine, obviously, and there seemed to be nothing kind of physical wrong with me. So I went back to school and my housemaster was like, you need to see the school GP. You know, you've been at home for a week. Like, this is just something we need to do. And I was really resistant and I didn't want to. And then when I went to the GP, I just have this memory of the school nurse being quite dismissive towards me. And there are a lot of people in the waiting room who were like physically sick. And I remember just like they arrived after me, but they all got kind of put in front of me and I waited for like an hour. And I just remember getting really angry in a way that I kind of hadn't really gotten before. And I'm glad she was like that, because I was so worked up and angry that by the time I got to the GP, it kind of, I was ready to say like, no, there is something wrong with me. So I said, I make these lists in my head and I have these bad thoughts. And, you know, I thought she might call the police. Like I thought I might get taken away. And yeah, I didn't know what was going to happen anyway. So she says, no, I think you've got OCD. And then she starts talking about this patient she had before who was like obsessed with knitting. And I just couldn't make the connection. I was like, well, that doesn't really sound like me. And also, yeah, like I said, I'm really messy. But she kept saying it and referred me to a psychiatrist. And then it was through seeing that psychiatrist and having OCD properly explained to me and like the mechanics of obsessions and compulsions and that you really can basically be obsessed with anything, that I was like, oh, yeah, this makes a lot of sense. But it took a while for me to kind of, I kind of went like back and forth with it when I spoke to her, because sometimes I would be like, okay, yeah, this is exactly it. I have a name for this thing now. And then sometimes I would be like, no, no, you're wrong. Like I am just a criminal and this doesn't work at all. You've given me the wrong diagnosis, which I hear is actually quite a common.
Very nice.
Yeah. Yeah. So that was, woo. That was how, that was how I got my diagnosis.
Cool. Well, thank you for that. Something you brought up there was anger. And I know for me in my life, that's something I've come to terms with in recent years. That there was definitely, and still is, some anger around OCD as well as other things that I wasn't dealing with, and I never saw myself as an angry person. And now I'm realizing maybe I am a bit, and I have to own that. Does anger play up for you now? Is there any?
Yeah, I think. Yeah, definitely. I mean, I think. So when I was younger, I saw anger as such a bad thing. I mean, my parents used to fight a lot quite badly, and I just kind of decided that all anger was bad, and therefore that I should like try really hard to never be angry and to never get in an argument or anything like that. And I kind of had to renegotiate my relationship with being angry, and I still find it really difficult to manage that, because as I have gotten better, I have experienced not suppressing the anger so much, and then the anger will, like, I will experience anger about like our mental health system in the UK, anger about how OCD is looked at, anger about time that I lost to it, just general human anger that happens that in the past I would just suppress, and now it comes up and I don't know what to do with it, because I didn't used to get angry when I was younger. And it's funny because like my sister, for instance, who's known me my whole life, is like, you are a very different person now. Like, you will say when something annoys you, and you will debate, and you will, you know, you'll say what. And sometimes I feel I've almost gone the other way, and now I'm quite like, in terms of just like, you know, like when people are discussing stuff, or if there's like a work-based problem, and I think someone's being unreasonable, I'll be like, no, you're being a dick, you know. And it's like, so I don't know, I just have this real issue with it where I find it really difficult to mediate my anger and know what is like OCD saying, no, you mustn't be angry, and what is like a reasonable amount of anger. I feel maybe it's just because I didn't grow up with anger, so people like know, they learn how to kind of moderate themselves. Anger is really hard for me.
Yeah, I completely agree. Can anyone else relate to that? Yeah, almost everyone. I agree, it's hard to regulate when you've suppressed it for so long, or denied it in my case, and now you're like, you're having to own it. Where's that balance?
Yeah, because I used to think that being an angry person would be the worst thing ever.
Yeah,
like, it would be ugly, it would be so bad. And then as I got better, I was like, actually, like, having no anger and just being meek and not saying what you believe in and fighting for what you think is really important, that's kind of ugly too. So it was just like this whole renegotiation, and yeah, it's difficult for me. Yeah. I still struggle with it.
I think that's an important point on recovery. It's like learning to live again. As someone wrote on my website once, it's learning who you are, what you stand for.
Mm.
It takes time and there's no rush.
Yeah, I spoke to someone yesterday who was here with her mom, and she was sort of saying, yeah, I feel like I'm kind of becoming this new person in my teens, because OCD pushed everything down so much before. And I really relate to that. It was like, you kind of have, when you get a diagnosis of OCD and you start kind of fighting the OCD monster and getting that out of your head, and there's more space for just you, like the essence of you. And you kind of go through this like childhood stage where you're kind of learning stuff about yourself that other people just went through in their actual childhood. It's really weird.
Yeah, I agree. Cool. So treatment.
Yeah.
Talk to me about that process and what it was like.
So the psychiatrist I was referred to, I was actually really lucky, because often there's like a divide between, well, I don't know if it's the same here, but in the UK, between like psychiatrists and therapists. So you'll have like, yeah, okay. So you have like your psychiatrist prescribing medication, and then you'll be seeing a therapist for CBT or talking therapy. I was really lucky because I got a psychiatrist who was actually also a CBT therapist. And that was really great, because she kind of understood both sides. And there wasn't this kind of divide between, okay, we'll medicate half your brain and we'll talk to the other half. It was more integrated, and I like that. I had cognitive behavioral therapy. Does anyone not know what CBT is? Okay, cool. Because like normally I'd give a definition, but yeah, I feel like that would just be, yeah. Okay, so I had CBT with her, and a lot of, doing a lot of exposures. I had to like do stuff like, you know, intentionally tell a lie to someone and just sit with it, and it was terrifying. And just other stuff, like the biggest exposure was my tendency used to be to just obey my OCD and shut myself away in my room. But now, according to like what I was learning, I was gonna have to like be around people for like several hours at a time and not take myself away to do lists. And it was really hard. And it wasn't like, it was complicated as well. Like it wasn't just like, okay, we'll start, and there was this progression to getting better, because my OCD didn't want me to get better. And I would pick fights with my therapist, and yeah, like I said, be quite manipulative and be like, I'm stopping treatment, I'm not, like, you know, like throw my toys out of the pram. And so it was kind of like, boop, 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 and, you know, do stuff like, I'm not taking my medication anymore. You know, I'm not going to do it. It's changing me. I'm just going to stop. Bad idea. You know, I think, you know, medication's a tough one in itself. One day I would actually really like to live free. There's no shame in taking medication, but I would like to be free from it, because there's side effects that I don't like. But yeah, just flat out stopping it like I did back then was not helpful. Yeah. And the other thing is, that I think is interesting, is I used to be really dismissive of all other talking therapies because the evidence base for CBT is so strong. And now I've kind of changed my opinion on that. And I feel that it is always appropriate for people with OCD to receive CBT as like their first treatment process. I don't think I would have been able to engage with any other kind of therapy if I hadn't had CBT first. So I want to say that I think it's really important. But in more recent years, I've had more kind of general just talking therapy. And I have found that really helpful because like not in kind of actually fighting the OCD itself, but just because your life is changed so much by the experience of having OCD that sometimes it's not about sitting in a room and working on like how you're going to fight this thing and manage it on a day-to-day basis. Sometimes it's also just important just to talk about the experience of having this stuff without kind of firefighting. So I found that really, really helpful as well. And support groups, great. I used to be like really horrified about the idea of going to a support group. I remember my psychiatrist suggested it to me. I was like, no, like no, like they'll just all be, you know, they'll all be like sitting on newspaper and, you know, like just like cleaning their chair. And I did have some contamination OCD, to be fair, but it wasn't like the main event. So I was just like, yeah, you know, like they'll all be sitting there like in latex gloves and it will all be about cleaning and it won't be helpful to me because I've kind of beaten that side of my OCD. That was one of the first things I worked on. So I was like, no, I'm not going. I was really dismissive about it. And then finally my mom like dragged me to a support group. She literally like pushed me in the door. I remember like squeaking and everyone turning around and looking at me. And I was like, oh my God, these people look so normal, like so normal. And it wasn't that people there didn't have issues with contamination because they did. But like there were a lot of people who had thoughts like me. And I was like, oh, you're not so special. Because I used to be like, oh, my OCD is so niche. No, no one else will understand. that wasn't the case. I'm not that special.
Yeah, that's a very important point. Yeah, when you have these thoughts, you feel like you're the only one. My OCD is very unique or special or niche. Or niche, you guys say.
Do you?
Yeah, niche, right?
Wow.
but yeah, when you're around others, as I'm sure you've experienced this conference, you realize there's a lot that's special about me and you guys as individuals.
But from right, a point yeah. Of view,
we've all had probably the same, as weird and wacky as one thought is, someone else has had it here, you know? And they've maybe gone even further on the wackiness of it.
Yeah, definitely. And I think that's important because if you kind of put your OCD on a pedestal and you're like, yeah, my OCD is so special, no one else would understand, it's really different, it's really whatever, it's really wacky, it's really out. You're almost kind of, I don't know, you're giving it this like status that it actually doesn't really deserve.
Yeah.
So yeah, that was an important thing for me to learn.
That's a good point. I think you're also kind of saying with that status that because mine is unique and special, therefore ERP is not going to work.
Right, yeah.
CBT is not going to work for me. When in reality, it doesn't matter how crazy that thought is, it's as treatable as a less quote-unquote crazy thought. So ERP, when they first kind of set you down and said, this is the treatment, what was that like?
Well, it's interesting because my psychiatrist never really said to me, okay, this is what we're going to do. And it's going to be kind of scary because I've heard people describe seeing therapists who said, okay, we're going to do this. And they're like, no, no. And I'm not saying that that's not the right way to do it. It's probably, I don't know how ethical it is not to tell people that they're going to do something, but she was just kind of like, right. I don't know. We just got in there so quick. And I didn't know about therapy, like different types of therapy then. I didn't really know what I'd signed up for. I didn't know that I wasn't doing psychoanalysis or I had no idea what it was. So I just kind of went with it. And then it would be kind of like afterwards when I would go home from sessions and realize the kind of magnitude of what she was asking me to do between sessions that I would be like, whoa, that's quite intense. But yeah, like because I've heard, like especially people who go to a support group first, who it kind of depends on the route that you access treatment, because a lot of people hear about other people's experiences of ERP through support groups or online, and then they're like, oh my God, I'm going to have to do that. Whereas I didn't know anyone with OCD. I'd never heard of anyone's experience. I had no idea what to expect. And it was I didn't really know what I'd signed up for. Yeah.
That's probably the best.
Yeah.
It's kind of like what came to my mind as you said about people going to talk support groups and then hearing other people's experiences. Obviously, ERP can be very troubling at times and scary. And if you've never done it, never had any idea of it, and then people are talking about it, it's similar to like a roller coaster.
Right. It's like you're in the queue and everyone's going, like, they're going fast. Oh my God, how was it? Like, it's so stressful.
It's terrifying. And then you go in with all these preconceptions.
Yeah.
Okay. And like the first sort of few sessions, what was that like?
Yeah, it was weird acclimatizing to the diagnosis. It was weird being that open with someone about this secret that I had kept. And it was difficult because I felt like there was, like, because of my OCD, it did feel like there was another person in the room. And I remember my psychiatrist said that at one point. It wasn't just like we're having a talking session, the two of us. It would be like, she's there, I'm here, my OCD is there. And it's this kind of tug of war. And like I said earlier, I would kind of flip between being really like, yeah, I want to do this, I've got to get rid of this, and being like, how would I know how to be without my OCD? And maybe I don't want to get better because I might become this really scary, angry person. I remember like as the first few sessions went by, like feeling more, you know, as I did exposures and sort of being like, oh, there's this anger thing, there's this sadness thing, like there's And, you know, like I remember getting into an argument at school with some friends and kind of standing up for myself in a way that I wouldn't have done before. And then being like, I don't like this. I don't know who I am. I just want my OCD security blanket so that I just don't mess stuff up. So the first few sessions were hard because it was this kind of duel between the three of us. Yeah.
That's awesome. Kind of like the Stockholm syndrome, where you wanted to get better, obviously, but then there was part of you was terrified of, well, what am I without this? It's painful, as horrible as it is, it's familiar. The saying is, the better the devil you know.
Yeah.
Has anyone else experienced that? That almost fear. Yeah. So, that really kind of struck a chord with me. So, ERP worked for you?
Yeah, I mean. Yes, it did work because I am better. So, but I don't think of myself as 100% recovered by any stretch. But I think of everything I could do for my OCD, that was the best thing. And I really rate it. And I am a lot better. So yeah, I would say it did work. But then, you know, like even like, in the last year, I had some more CBT for OCD issues that I hadn't kind of ever spoken about before. And I remember speaking with this therapist, and one of the things that he said that was kind of was uplifting and depressing at the same time. He was like, you know, maybe you will always just have this thing. You know, people talk about CBT being able, if you do it properly, being able to work for everyone. And he was like, but maybe you will just always have some of this stuff. And the thing is not like doing endless courses of ERP and trying to get rid of it completely, but maybe the thing is kind of accepting that it's there and being like, but what do I want to do? Do I want to make this list right now? Do I want to get really worked up about this? And maybe sometimes if the answer is yes, I really need to sit down and make this list. And I want to, and I can't do anything else until I've done. Maybe I'm just going to accept that that's something I have to do and then move on from that. And then maybe later in the day, there'll be another list and I don't want to do it right now because I'm enjoying myself. And I've been doing, I actually did that this conference. quite stressful meeting so many people and talking publicly. And I was in Austin. I wanted to have a good time. So, you know, most of the time when I've had stuff on my list, I'm like, yeah, it can wait. It's there, but it can wait. But a couple of times I've been like, no, I'm really stressed. And I really need to just sit down and make this list. And I don't know, because I hadn't come across that in the ERP before. I think that's more ACT-y. Because before the goal had always been like, we have to get rid of this thing completely. It has to go. And it was almost like I couldn't be a whole person until it was gone completely. The goal was to get rid of it entirely. But actually, I found the idea that it could just be there a bit and I could just decide, okay, on this occasion, is it really important? I found that quite liberating. And then in the kind of like trying less hard to get rid of it completely, you know, conversely, it bothered me less.
Yeah, I think that's a really good point. I don't know if anyone can relate, but it feels like, I like what you're saying, is almost like I can't be happy until it's 100% gone. When in reality, we're humans, we have emotions, things come and go, especially in stressful periods in our lives. OCD loves that. But you can live your life even if some of it's there.
Yeah, and also like a lot of people with OCD do relapse. And I don't want to live my life thinking, oh my God, if I relapse, then that will be the worst thing ever. And, you know, like it will be, I won't be able to recover ever and it will be awful. Like, so I just kind of trying to see it as not such a negative thing and just, you know, a thing I have has been helpful. Yeah.
Yeah, I like that. It was like a transition from being kind of broken to just being human, you know?
Yeah, definitely.
You feel it. There's nothing necessarily wrong with you.
Yeah.
Okay. Just looking at my questions here. I'm big on, as you know, like obviously ERP, absolutely. But then also what are some of the things you did outside of that in terms of whether it's self-care, whether it's like fitness, whether it's meditation? Was there anything you did? Supplement therapy.
Yeah, okay. Well, my mom is a yoga teacher, so she's always trying to get me to meditate and do mindfulness, and I suck at it so bad. I don't find that helpful. And it's interesting because I remember reading this thing that was sort of saying that, like, sometimes when people are, it was an article and it was saying, sometimes when people are so anxious and so distressed, actually mindfulness is not necessarily always the answer, and it can actually like induce a panic attack, and I had experienced that before. And I'm not slamming it because I see it working for a lot of people, but it didn't work for me. And I remember kind of that made me feel really crap because it was like everyone else seemed to be on this mindfulness train, and I would sit down and try and do mindfulness, and I would have a panic attack. When I was an inpatient in hospital, I remember being sent to this kind of blanket mindfulness class and having a panic attack. Well, I don't know. I didn't call it a panic attack at the time, but looking back, I think it was because I was just kind of shaking and hyperventilating. And I remember like the teacher, she didn't really know what to do. Like she just said, do you want to leave? And I don't know, it just made me feel really crap. But then I kind of went through this stage of being like, screw mindfulness. It's not for everyone. Like da 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 da. But now I realize I do stuff that is kind of mindfulness, but like in my own way. I enjoy kind of just like listening to music and walking really fast. That's kind of, and you know, play. I just sound silly. I know people who are really into yoga, like my mom, would probably be like, no, that's not it. But like stuff like just playing solitaire on my phone and kind of being really focused on that. And collaging, I collage as well. That's like the kind of closest I feel I can get to. And it's not to say I'll never be able to do it, although it would be helpful. And okay, so being less negative, stuff that really helped me was I got a dog. And I know that's not feasible for everyone, obviously, but just spending time around animals, it's a completely different thing to being with people. You don't have to talk. There's an acceptance there. That and actually having Rocky, like I got him pretty soon after I came out of hospital, and it was just like, hey, he needs to be walked twice a day. He needs his poo picked up. He needs to be fed, like just that kind of structure, caring for someone else. And actually, funnily enough, even though I'm so much better, and I live with my partner, Josh, and Rocky, yeah, you've been outed, and Rocky, like there are days sometimes like I had to take Rocky to my mom because I had stuff on, and then like found myself at home without Rocky. And I was like, where's my structure? Oh my God. And I like didn't get out of bed or like, and so I still kind of need that a bit. I find that helpful. More recently, swimming, really good for me. Like really, really relaxing and nice. Really recommend that actually. Yeah. And funnily enough, writing used to be, and now it's like, oh no, this is just something I have to do now. I used to find writing when I was like 15 or 16, I used to write like really angsty poems, and find it really chill, but they weren't any good. And now kind of doing it professionally and being more disciplined about it, like I don't find it as relaxing. It's more like a job. But yeah, back in the day, I found it really good. So I do kind of encourage journaling and that kind of thing, because I think it's, it doesn't matter if it's any good or not, it's for you. Yeah.
Yeah, no, that's great. And I love what you said about mindfulness and meditation. I think it has been overhyped by many people. I mean, I love it personally.
Yeah.
But I also appreciate some people not right at that particular stage. But then also, you touched on it, it doesn't have to be sitting here kind of like this. It can be like for me going for a walk in the woods, hearing birdsong.
Oh, I like that. That's good.
Dragged me into the now.
Yeah.
I'm forced almost. And that's mindfulness, and you collaging mindfulness because you're engaged, your hands are. And I think, so mindfulness has been latched onto this kind of Buddhist sitting. There's nothing wrong with that, but
it doesn't have to be like that. Yeah.
Sport is a great one as well.
Yeah.
Cool. No, that's great. Thank you for your activities. Are we doing the time? Right, I'll speed up. So, quickly tell us about your book.
Okay, so it's funny because I'm 26 now, and I came out when I was like 21. But then it was published late. It was published by quite a small UK publisher, and then got sold to America later on. And then because you guys are so big, it was like, whoa, like having this kind of resurgence. But it's funny because for me, it's something I wrote 5 years ago. Or even slightly longer because I was writing when I was 20. But yeah, I was working as a journalist, and I had a blog, and there were a few things about OCD that really pissed me off. There was like this product called the OCD hand sanitizer. It annoyed me because it had like instructions for use, like apply again, screw cap, are you sure it's closed, all this shit. Sorry. And there are no kids in here, I hope. Yeah, so it just really annoyed me, and I wrote a blog post about it, and the response was amazing. You know, it wasn't all like, I did get called the biggest lump of socialist turd on the internet, so that was fun. And then do you have the Daily Mail here, or like your equivalent? I don't know. Anyway, they wrote about it, and the comments were interesting. But on the whole, the response to it was so overwhelmingly positive that I felt really kind of, oh, maybe I could be open about this thing. Started writing about it more. And then a publisher asked me whether I wanted to write a book about it. And I wasn't sure because I always wanted to write fiction. And I didn't know if I wanted to write a whole book about my life. But my colleagues at the time were really supportive, and they were like, no, you should just do this thing. And I kind of thought, well, I would have really liked a book like that. So I was like, okay, yeah. And I wrote it. And it was funny, like writing it, I kind of had to write it like as if it wasn't actually going to ever be read by anyone else. Cause if I had that thought in my head, I don't think I would be able to write half the stuff I wrote. And then it came out, and the response was really cool and really good. Even among like my family and friends, who I was worried about what they would think of how I had portrayed them. They were really supportive. My dad was pissed. But like, on the whole, it was pretty good.
And what was that like? So when you shared your story, I'm assuming there was probably some fear and worry around what people were going to think of me, the stigma. What was that like, that kind of uncertainty of pushing it out there?
It was really scary. I mean, but to be honest, I think anyone who has told someone about their OCD goes through that fear. Like, what if they reject me? What if they think I'm a freak? And it was kind of like that, but just with a lot of people I didn't know. I do still feel like the scariest part was telling people I knew and loved about my OCD. And after that, you're kind of just putting it out there to people you don't know. And if they want to take it, then they can. And if they don't, then... But it was interesting to me because the me who had OCD when I was kind of 14, 15, 16 wouldn't have been able to do that because I would have been so worried about what's everyone going to think. And I did worry. Of course I did. Like, yeah.
That's good to hear. And I agree. Like, for me with the podcast, it's been easier telling the world than as my closest friends and family.
Does anyone else feel that? That is kind of, yeah, you can talk to people you don't know about it. But like, yeah.
It's weird because you'd think it would be the other way. Not.
No.
Okay, thank you. We've got a few more questions and then we're going to open up to you guys. So if you have any questions, that's great. So what was your biggest epiphany kind of your recovery journey? Was there any sort of light bulb moment?
Okay, there were a couple. So the first, and it was just a really obvious one, but I remember being like 16 and this just blew my mind. I always thought that in order to make an obsession go away, you had to do a compulsion. And then I remember like learning in ERP that like the more you do compulsions, the more you have obsessions. And I was like, oh, so the way to kind of make intrusive thoughts and obsessions less big is not to kind of try to fix them and to solve them with a compulsion. It's just to not do anything. And that still kind of blows my mind because it's so simple. It's like, oh, I just don't have to do anything. But that's not really like that. And I remember just like, it's so beautifully simple, but just so agonizing at the same time. And I still come back to that. And I find that kind of helpful still sometimes when I'm getting really compulsive and I just remind myself I don't have to do anything. It's just, yeah, I go, I don't have to. It doesn't always work, but yeah. And then the other one was like what I was talking about earlier when I said kind of with the most recent CBT I had, thinking, okay, maybe the goal doesn't have to be that this thing has to be eliminated entirely, that it could just be there and I could still live a meaningful life and that would be okay.
Absolutely. Yeah, I love that. And then similar, yeah, was there like a particular roadblock you faced? And if so, how did you overcome it?
I think, yeah, the hardest thing, and I still face it on bad days, is kind of what I was talking about earlier with thinking, oh, but I'm so special, is I go through this thing where I think, despite being really educated about OCD and talking about it basically daily, where I think, but I don't have OCD, I'm actually magic. And I still have to do all this stuff to keep me and my dog and Josh happy and safe. And, you know, obviously it's magical thinking for other people, but it's not for me. And I don't understand how my brain does that, because it feels really weird to be able to get up and talk about magical thinking and be like, yeah, it's magical thinking. It's, you know, don't listen to that. But then when I'm like in the privacy of my own room, I'm like, but it's real for me. And I still struggle with that, to be honest. And it feels weird to me, like I said, that I can talk about this stuff every day, but go home and be like, maybe I don't have OCD. Maybe I'm magic. I'm a superhero.
I agree with that. When I was 10, I had that thought, maybe I'm just this really shitty superhero.
Yeah, right? Yeah, that's so true. Yeah, you're just this rubbish thought superhero, and it's just agonizing.
Do you get like imposter syndrome as well? Similar to maybe I don't have OCD, also maybe I'm lying to people about having OCD, just been given this award. This goes on in my head, so I'm projecting here.
No, I relate to that. Like, I'm sometimes like, but what if actually, right, I am just this really bad person. Therefore, I had to set up this quite complex structure in order to stop me being the terrible bad person I really am. And I don't have OCD. It was just appropriate safety precautions. And now I've been given this award and, oh my God! Yeah, I definitely relate to that quite strongly.
Okay, so maybe you could pick up the phone and call your 20-year-old self.
Mm.
So this is when you're starting writing the book. What would you tell her?
I'm not ignoring your question. I think I would say it's going to be difficult, but it's also going to be a lot of fun, and you're going to get to do some really cool stuff because of it. You're going to get to go to Texas and also Australia. I went to Australia because it was published there. You're going to get to meet wallabies and a lot of really cool people in the States with OCD. You're going to get to drink Lone Star. And have awful American English tea because it sucks, guys. You need to work on it. I would say it's going to be really difficult, but it's going to be fun. So don't be so scared and just JFDI. Just, yeah. Do you guys know that expression? I don't know. Just do it. Yeah.
I've got more questions, but there's also like 50 minutes. No, like 5 minutes left. So I want to give you guys the opportunity to fill that time if you want with questions. And then if there's some silence, then I can jump back in.
So the question here from the audience member was whether Lily has written any fiction.
So I am writing my first fictional book at the moment. It's a young adult book because my book is, Because We Are Bad is not really suitable for under 15s. So now I'm kind of writing the book that I wanted to have when I was younger. It doesn't actually have a working title yet, and it will probably, I hope, be out in the next year or two. So actually there's nothing kind of out there yet, but a short story. Yeah, but that's kind of slightly autobiographical. Well, it is autobiographical. I've got a short story coming there in. There's a Penguin Random House book coming out in the UK in a few months that I've contributed a chapter to. It's called, they've changed the title of it. I think it's called What Doesn't Kill You. So that'll be out. But yeah, so the main thing is the young adult book that I'm working on at the moment. And everything else is just on my laptop. So it's not, yeah. What was your other question?
I believe the next question to Lily was about losing friends because of OCD.
I lost friends. I don't feel like I had the same thing as like a reassurance relationship with people. It wasn't that, but I think I had friends that I tolerated and put up with because to end that friendship would be an angry, mean thing to do. And as I got better, I was like, wait, no, these people are just not very nice. I don't need to associate myself with them. And then another thing that caused me to lose friends was just like throughout my teens, like self-medicating with alcohol, not being an especially reliable friend. I've lost friends both because of my OCD and mental health issues, and also in the shedding of that stuff. And I find it quite hard to make friends, actually, because I don't know. I used to kind of just be friends with everyone because my OCD told me to, and now I'm kind of like, what do I look for in a friend? What do I want in a friend? What would a friend mean to like the version of me that is less kind of ruled by OCD? What, like, I don't really know what I want in a friendship because I used to just accept all friends, even if they didn't treat me very well. So yeah, it's a difficult one.
The next audience question was to Lily, how has OCD made you stronger and molded the person you are today?
Well, I remember actually being asked a similar question before when I was in Australia by an interviewer who said, like, if you could if you could have had a life without OCD, would you choose that? And I kind of thought about it and I was surprised because I like my instinct would just be to be like, yes, of course I would want that. Who wouldn't want that? Then I was like, I don't know what kind of person I would be without my OCD. It was such a part of me growing up. And I think it's made me quite empathetic and quite open to, you know, to kind of people telling me stuff and being like, okay, that's not the weirdest thing I've ever heard. Like I was saying last night, I have never met a person with OCD who wasn't really kind. So I've made like a great support network through my support group in the UK and also through like, yeah, just on Twitter, talking to people. And so, yeah, I think in the OCD, like the good parts about it were kind of making me more open to understanding other people's experience and understanding like the struggle of having a human mind. And also, yeah, just meeting a lot of really cool, caring people. Yeah.
The next audience question was around having OCD and working and how Lily manages that.
Yeah. Well, I do model in the UK and like you can't turn up for a shoot like and just be a complete anxious mess because if you feel that bad about yourself, you're not gonna kind of be able to really deliver what your job requires you to do that day. And so sometimes I find there's this weird thing where I kind of show up and I try and I feel myself kind of trying to front and, you know, if I end up saying, oh, I have OCD or if the book comes up because, you know, it's out there that I wrote this then people and, you know, talking to like makeup artists and stylists who are like, oh, but you seem so happy. And you say, and I might be thinking, oh, I feel really crappy today. Yeah, definitely. But one way I've tried to deal with that is, you know, I don't feel I have to tell everyone about my life all the time because that would be exhausting. But like, I allow myself to turn up to work and to not deliver 100% and to be okay with that. Like it's, you know, I will do my job so that the company I'm working for gets the pictures they're happy with, but maybe I won't talk to everyone and be really engaging. And because before my OCD would tell me I have to get on with everyone. I have to be really nice. I have to be my best self. And sometimes now I just let myself turn up with a coffee and just be like, ugh. And that's kind of a release in that, I guess. Yeah.
So the next audience question was about OCD and parenting and specifically what Lily's parents did that helped her and didn't help her?
Yeah, my mum and dad always fought really hard for me to get the best treatment that I could get. And I really appreciated that. My mum kind of love bombed me and I needed that. And she's always been really loving and supportive, which was important. And she she fought for me to do stuff that would make me better, you know, just even like pushing me into that support group. And just my mom in particular, just understanding that if I'm going to talk about OCD, stuff might come out my mouth that sounds weird and just being like accepting of that. And she tells me how proud she is of me. And that's not, she says, it's not for writing the book. It's just for like the fact that you have this thing and you live your life with it, that makes me proud of you. And that helps me. One thing I think parents do, and I totally get why they do this. I think it comes from a place of love and intense frustration, but shouting when a child is doing compulsions or just getting really like frustrated by it, it's difficult because I see how frustrating it is for people to watch. But I remember a few times like, my mom just really losing it and just shouting at me and just being like, why can't you be better? Why can't? And that was really not great. But to be honest, like, it wasn't a daily occurrence. I just feel that where possible, being patient with your child and trying to show them love rather than aggression when doing compulsion, because I, just as much patience and unconditional love and support as you can. And if so, I just, it's not to say that, because obviously parents are human too, I just wish that when my mum had been finding it really difficult, that she was able to kind of say that to me in a calm way. I think that would have been more productive than just getting really angry. But then I recognize that, like, we are very frustrating people to be around, and I see that. So, yeah, does that help? Yeah, I think. And then I don't want you to feel awful about that, because, like, I can understand why my mum did shout. I get it. It's really frustrating. But I just, yeah, I forgive her completely for it. It just didn't help in the moment. Yeah, no, I think it comes from fear and love and frustration. Yeah, I get why it happens.
And the next audience question was hope around getting children earlier diagnosis so people don't have to struggle for 10 years before they get that diagnosis and treatment.
I think that already, like, there has been a shift. Like, there are a lot of people like you and me who didn't have a diagnosis until we were teenagers. And it seems to me that more and more people are finding the name for what they have a bit earlier. There are so many children at this conference, and that just really fills me with hope. I think the thing is, for parents and health professionals, you can't know that there's something specific wrong with your child and that it's called OCD unless you have some baseline knowledge of what OCD is. And OCD has been such a overlooked mental health condition, despite the fact that it's really prevalent. So I think people sharing their experiences and kind of just getting the word out there that this is a thing that people live with. And I think, you know, asking your child, are you okay? But not just in a kind of, are you okay? Yes, okay. Would, like, really being curious, being open to how a child experiences the world, and having those conversations that, you know, that maybe you don't want to have with a child because you just want to kind of, everything's okay, everything's fine, but actually they're important.
The next audience question was around Lily's relationship with relapses and how she handles that.
I think one thing that I know is that it will never be as bad as when I initially had OCD and I didn't have a name for it and I didn't know what it was. I feel a real sense of relief knowing that I will never have to endure that intense loneliness again. So I feel, you know, like a few months ago I wasn't good. But the people who I loved and cared about knew that I had this thing, and we'd spoken about it before when I was feeling better. And just knowing that people would understand and be caring and compassionate, and that I wasn't going to be told off, you know, that I wasn't going to have to stop doing the things I loved. And yeah, just trying to not see relapse as this really awful thing, like more seeing it as, okay, it's going to be another challenge and you might learn something. You know, you might not, it might just be crappy, but the idea that relapse doesn't have to, like, it doesn't have to be a permanent state. It can just be something you go through. That helps me.
So the next audience question was around what Lily does for fun and how she uses her time now she's doing less compulsions.
Well, one thing that is a kind of enjoyable thing is learning to be in my own company and enjoy that. Before, if I ever had time to myself, it was like, okay, I have this hour window where I'm going to order everything in my head and sort it out. And it's going to be really unenjoyable. So one thing with this kind of like rebirth that I've enjoyed is being like, I can be on my own and not be distracted by other people to kind of keep me busy, but also not have to do OCD stuff. And I can just really enjoy being with me and my own company. That's been really cool. Having fun. Like, I didn't really used to have fun before. I used to smile in front and hope that no one would notice that I wasn't an entirely normal person. And now I find myself actually really enjoying stuff. Not always, like, you know, there's noise in my head, but I'll be like just like these last few days in Austin, there have been a lot of moments where I'm like, I'm having a really good time. Whereas before, I used to really dread holidays because I would feel like I'm going to be surrounded by people all the time and I have to look like I'm having a good time. It's going to be stressful. It's going to be hot. I'm going to be clammy. Oh my God. But yeah, so like enjoying my own company and enjoying having fun. I feel like I didn't have much fun when I was a child. Lots of kids, like, I feel like childhood should be a fun and carefree time. And of course, it's not for a lot of kids because of maybe mental illness or family setup or like social issues, whatever. I didn't really enjoy my childhood. So now I'm kind of feeling like I'm just having some fun that I need to have. And it's really cool.
Cool. Any last questions? Nope. Well, thank you for all those questions. They were brilliant.
Yeah, thank you guys.
If okay with you guys, I will use the it shouldn't have picked up your voices, so you're staying anonymous. So the questions, the answers will be on the podcast because I think they were great questions. Any last comments?
I just wanna say how nice it has been to spend time with you all. Some of you came to the signing yesterday, it was nice to chat with you individually. But now has been really great as well. And everyone who's kind of come up to me throughout the conference and shared their story, said, hey, it's really wonderful and it means the world. And I wish you guys all the best with everything you do and keep in touch. I'm on Instagram and Twitter. Yeah, it's been great.
Cool. Thank you. And thank you to seeing so many of you, because I know it wasn't printed in the program. It was the last minute, so I'm guessing you've all used the app. So it's great to see you here. And thank you for you giving your time, and congrats on the award.
Thank you, and thank you for interviewing me.
So there you have it. I hope you enjoyed that new format. And thanks again to Lily, everyone in the audience, and the ISDF. And all the show notes, where you can find out about Lily, her book, and everything else, will be at theocdstories.com. That's theocdstories.com. And quick disclaimer, guys, this podcast is not therapy. It is not a replacement for therapy. Please seek treatment from a trained professional. And until we speak, take care.